So this is our fourth and final in this series. I'm one that needs a little review and reminder. So week one, if our money could talk, it would say, I can add meaning to your life, but I'm not the meaning of life. Week two, if the money could talk, it would say, the moment you think you own me, I actually own you. Last week, Jimmy covered this subject. If our money could talk, my direction reveals your ultimate affection. And today, if our money could talk to us, it would say, what you choose to do with me speaks volumes about who and whose you are. So my spin on this fourth statement in three simple words would be this. If our money could talk, or I would tell you this about your money, money don't lie. Years ago, I was in Cleveland to speak at a conference on evangelism. I certainly wasn't there to watch the Browns. And I get on an elevator, and I'm claustrophobic. That's no secret. It's one of my great fears. But I can do an elevator, just not very long, and I need to stand in the corner by myself. If you're ever on an elevator with me, don't talk to me, don't bother me, let me stand in the corner and get through it. So I'm on this elevator in Cleveland, and you know how you get on an elevator and you turn around right away and you start punching the buttons. Well, I realized I'd forgotten my notes, and I needed my notes. I was about to speak to a pretty good-sized group, and the elevator goes up to my floor, and it stops, but instead of the door opening, it makes that sound and that convulsing like it's going to open, but it doesn't. So there's this little open door button with the two arrows, so I'm like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da trying to get the door open. Push it over and over, and I keep hearing the sound, but the doors don't open. And I'm not okay with this because I'm claustrophobic, and I'm starting to get a little uncomfortable. So the elevator then goes up to the 14th floor, which I hadn't punched, and stops there. And again, it sounds like the door wants to open, but it doesn't open. Now I'm panicking. So I lost it. And I've seen enough movies to know people are watching you on the elevator. So, hey, I need help. I start yelling on the elevator by myself. I said, this stupid elevator is stuck. And then a voice behind me says, no, it ain't. Well, I got on the elevator by myself. When you get on an elevator by yourself and you hear another voice, every hair on my body stood at attention. I mean, I turned around and did one of those Karate Kid things, like I was ready for whatever. And then I realized, this is an elevator that has doors on both sides. There were seven people that I had kept closing the door on, waiting to get on the elevator, but all wondering if they should because of this psycho they just saw. Not the first time in my life I've learned this lesson. For me, it's a simple one. I'm constantly looking the wrong way. I am always looking the wrong way. And I want to tell you this morning, if you believe Christianity consists of just coming to church, putting your offering in the box, and going home and doing your own thing, that's churchianity. That won't save anybody. I need more than churchianity. I need actual Christianity. When you're looking the wrong way, my suggestion would be this. The best thing you can do is turn yourself around. And it starts with putting God first. If you're not putting God first, then you're looking the wrong way. Now, I know I preach to you all every week, most every week, but rarely will I give advice. And this is why I don't really want to be a counselor, because I've always figured everyone is so unique that even if I've been through what you've been through, I can't really know what you feel. So I'm careful to give advice. But years and years ago, an elderly lady named Myrtle gave me some advice when it comes to finance that I've been living by ever since, and I want to pass it on to you today. She said, always start with your source and not your situation. Because if you have the right source, then the situation won't matter. Isn't that good advice? Always start with the source, not the situation, because if you have the right source, the situation won't matter. So as we close out this series and we look forward to December and the greatest gift that was ever given, I want to look at a familiar story that Jesus told. We studied this parable in Corey's class, and if you all were in there, I actually taught that week. I may use an illustration or two that I used then, but I know everybody in Corey's class needs to hear things at least three times. So this, in Luke chapter 12, this man comes to Jesus. This is before he tells the story. This sets it up. Luke 12, 13. Then someone called from the crowd, "Teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me." Jesus replied, "Friend, who made me a judge over you to decide such things as that?" Then he said, "Beware. guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own. So Jesus is a rabbi. Rabbis did have the authority to weigh in on legal matters. So this guy wasn't altogether out in left field. Now, either he knew Jesus was a rabbi or somebody told him Jesus was a rabbi. So he thought, okay, here's a chance to get this guy to settle my legal issue and take care of my brother who's holding this against me. And Jesus wanted no part of it. He didn't even acknowledge what the man had said except to say, you know what, that's not my business. And then he made this great declaration that life is not measured by how much you own. And then he tells a story. I love this about Jesus. Betty White died not long ago. Did y'all see that? She was 99 years old, 18 days away from her 100th birthday. And in her final interview, she was asked, what's the key? What's the secret to living a long life? And her response was simple and to the point. She said, try not to die. That's pretty good. But if that's your only goal, then you often don't remember how to live. If you're just trying to not die, then often you let the abundant life get away from you. So let's look at this story Jesus told. I got you out of sequence there, Roxanne. I'm sorry about that. Luke chapter 12, beginning with verse 13, I think. Then Jesus told them this story. Let's go with verse 16. There we are. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, let's stop there for a minute. Anybody ever talk to themselves? Let me see hands. The whole congregation. Anybody ever answer yourself when you're talking? You're worse than that psycho on the elevator, I'll tell you that. Wow. Then he told them a story. A rich man, a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, so he's talking to himself, what should I do? I don't have any room for all my crops. Now he's going to answer himself. Then he said, I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods, and I'll sit back and say to myself, he's going to talk to himself in the future, my friend, you have enough stored money stored away for years to come. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, you'll die this very night. Then who will get everything you've worked for? Now this is to us. Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. Man, oh man, this is some kind of story. Now, I want to talk to you about it, but let me set it up this way. Let's say the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were destroyed, and we were given the responsibility of writing a new one. Our church is to come up with a new Constitution, but there's a stipulation. You can only have 10 laws. New Constitution, but you only have 10 laws. What 10 laws would you include? Well, you would want to prevent murder, so you would put something in there about that. You would want to do something to prevent private property rights going away, so you'd put something in there about theft or stealing. How many of you would want to include in our 10 laws that govern this nation, that and our church comes up with the Constitution, how many of you want to put something in there about honoring your father and your mother? Or not taking the Lord's name in vain? Or how about this? You shall not covet? We can only come up with 10. Are we going to include a law against coveting? Probably wouldn't put that in your top 10, but God wrote a constitution for his people. A law against coveting was included. Number 10, thou shalt not covet. When I was writing this, my mind went back to a commercial from years ago when Shaquille O'Neal was starting his NBA career. This will take you back, because I think this commercial's from the 90s, I believe, the early 90s. Some of you will remember it. Others of you will be like, I don't know who that is. That's okay. So check this out.
Yeah.
How many of you remember that? Don't even think about it. One of the 10 laws that God gave his people, number 10, could have read when it comes to coveting other people's stuff. Don't even think about it. And the remedy to that sin is the development of contentment in your life. Again, Jesus said, and your money would say, if it could talk, what you choose to do with me speaks volumes about who and whose you are. So Jesus answers this man who wants a legal dispute settled with a story. I love it when Jesus always says, hey boys, let me tell you a story. That's what he did in verse 16. And then he tells them the story in Luke chapter 16 that we read. What a story. Now, what always gets me about this story is that in the middle of this man's planning, God steps in and calls him a fool. You can track the times in the Bible where God called someone a fool. They are few and far between. So it makes me want to ask, when I'm reading this story, why did God call him a fool, and what can I do to prevent God from ever calling me the same thing? Because the end of the story, Jesus brought us into it by saying, this is how it is for anyone who stores up treasures for themselves but doesn't give consideration to others. So let's talk about why God called him a fool. Number one, he was a fool because he forgot about other people. Look at verse 17. What shall I do? I don't have room for all my crops. Now, I'm making some assumptions here, but there's not one mention of his kids, not one mention of his cousins, not one mention of his wife if he has one, not one mention of the church if he's part of one, not one mention of anybody else, no family, no friends, no fellowship, just I, me, my. He's the poster child for Toby Keith's song, I Want to Talk About Me, 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 me. Listen to what John said in 1 John 3. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Nothing wrong with this man making plans. The Bible is pro-plan. But every indication from the tone Jesus took was that this man had forgotten about everyone except himself. My kids taught me a nursery rhyme. I came up with it early service because I've said it for years, but I'm getting older, and I'm afraid to try it right now, but I'm too deep, so here we go. Heck, I can't even get started. Thank you. I threw myself a tea party this afternoon at 3. 'Twas very small, 3 guests in all, just I, myself, and me. Myself ate all the sandwiches while I drank all the tea. 'Twas also I who ate the pie and passed the cake to me. There are exceptions, but society in general has become completely self-absorbed. America has become a thing society. We buy things for the house, we buy things for the kitchen, we buy things for the den, we buy things for the living room, we buy things for the garage, we buy things to put in the garage, we buy things to put behind the garage, we buy things to put things on, we buy things to put things in, we insure all those things, and when we get tired of all those things, we have a garage sale to pass those things on to somebody else who thinks they want more things. Well, evidently, the Apostle Paul had his things right because he said, forgetting those things that are behind me. And then he said, in all things give thanks. And then he said, whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, and of good report, think on these things. Why? Because the day is going to come when the only thing left in the box is you. And all those things that you've accumulated won't matter. God has designed us to love people and use things. Our culture has turned that around. We now use people and love things. So, I've prepared this message quite a while ago, and I've been doing a personal inventory. Every now and then, I'll clean out my closet and take things to Goodwill or to the church over there in town that distributes them. And I like doing that because I'm not wearing them. They're just sitting in there. They're good clothes. But then I did a revival at my dad's, and I had my new shoes on, and my mom, and I wore just about a different pair every night. And my mom's like, how many pairs of shoes you got? I said, well, I don't know. How many you got? Well, she is extravagant. She's the Imelda Marcos of Switzerland County, Indiana. That's who she is. You remember Imelda Marcos? She had like 2,000 pair of shoes, while everyone in the Philippines didn't have one pair. So it got me to thinking, golly, I got a lot of shoes, and I wish I hadn't counted because I felt guilty. I thought, I'm just going to confess to the church and list my shoes for everybody. Here they go. 5 pair of dress shoes, 4 good pair of athletic shoes, 4 old pair of athletic shoes for yard work, 3 pair of golf cleats, 2 pair of softball cleats, 3 pair of flip-flops, 1 pair of sandals, 3 pair of casual brown shoes, 1 pair of Hey Dudes, thank you Terry and Shauna, 2 pair of work boots, 2 pair of cowboy boots, 2 pair of Harley boots. By my VV Indiana math, your preacher has 32 pair of shoes. Now I can define for you what extravagant is. 33 pair of shoes is extravagant. And if I'd have counted 35 pair in my house, 36 would have been extravagant, because we always think that someone has too much, except for us. Well, without the need for a specific number, I can tell you unequivocally this morning that you and I have too much when all of our planning is for ourselves and none of it is for other people. That puts you in the territory where you may hear a word from God someday that you don't want to hear, you fool. Secondly, he was a fool because he forgot where it all came from. Look at verse 16. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. Well, let's talk about the fertile ground, because he might have been a talented guy, but he couldn't create ground, could he? Anybody know of anybody who can make land? Where'd the fertile field come from? Where did the farmland come from? Where did the rain come from? Where'd the sunshine come from? Where'd the seed come from? Where'd the soil come from? There's no accounting by this farmer, and there should be, of where all of that came from. Listen to what James said in James 1:17. Whatever is good and perfect is a gift coming down to us from God our Father, who created all the lights in heavens. He never changes or casts a shifting shadow. The ideal of self-indulgence is an attractive idea. Why wouldn't you spend everything on yourself or the people you love? You've earned it, right? You did it. The world will tell you that if you give it away, you're a sucker. Keep it all for yourself. You never know when there'll be a rainy day. Well, take it from your preacher. Better to please the one who makes the rain than to worry about a rainy day. Someone calculated statistics recently, how we spend time doing things in our life. Now, the interesting thing is, and you got to be imaginative here, they used cumulative time. So you're going to hear some of these and you're going to say, that can't be right. But it is. So in the course of a 75-year lifespan, and these all add up to 75, here's how we will spend our time. 10 years acquiring an education. Again, this is cumulative time. 5 years eating. 12 years working. 4 years talking with each other. 3 years sick. 4 years riding in automobiles. 3 years reading books. 10 years amusing ourselves. 24 years sleeping. Now let's leave that up there for a minute, Rocks. Somebody tell me what's missing from that list. There you go. I'm hearing it all. Let's start with the basics. Because I'll tell you this. I've seen people fall away from church before. That's the last thing people give up. If someone falls away from church, and I know this is a blanket statement, and I'm not being judgmental, I'm telling you, in all seriousness, generally, that's the last thing someone will give up. If they stop coming to church altogether, most likely, they've stopped reading their Bible way before that. And they've stopped praying way before that. That's just the way it is. That's one of the last things they would give up is the appearance of being at church. So I'm going to take the basic worship hour, 1 hour a week for 75 years. Now stay with me here. If from the day you were born until you're 75, you came to church for 1 hour of worship and you never missed, it's like you, Sarah, never missed 75 years. Do you know how much time you've just given the Lord? 5.5 months. 5.5 months of your life. If you never missed coming every week for an hour. So that's depressing. So let's add the Sunday school hour. 75 years. You never missed church, worship hour, and you never miss studying during that Sunday school hour for 75 years. We would applaud you. Do you know how much time in a 75-year lifespan you've just given the Lord now? 11 months. 4 years in a car. 11 months with the church family. 10 years amusing ourselves. 11 months with the church family. 24 years sleeping. 11 months with the church family. Now, I couldn't find a study that would track our money in the same way. I think I'm glad I didn't, because it would put a queasy feeling in my stomach. Those numbers might make me a little bit uncomfortable. Now listen, church, if you're ever tempted to live under the delusion about what you've done and what you've accumulated and what you've accomplished and what you've compiled and what you've laid up and what you have in store and what you've planned, then you need to commit to verse the memory we started this whole series with. I want you to say it with me again. We started it 4 weeks ago. Let's say it together. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who... Man, if you all were selling me insurance, I would not buy after that pitch. So let's try it again, like you believe it. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. And if your money could talk, it would say what you choose to do with me speaks volumes about who and whose you are. Lord called this man a fool because he forgot others and because he forgot where it all came from. Let's close with this. He called him a fool because he forgot you can't buy joy and contentment. He thought you could. Luke 12:19. I'll sit back and say to myself. See, this is planning on talking to yourself someday. That's interesting. I'll sit back that day and say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now eat, take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. So he wants to be happy, but he assumes it will come someday down the road when he gets all of this put in place. So he's putting off that joy. Can't have it right now because he doesn't have his bigger barns up. Can't have it right now. Can't take life easy. Can't enjoy things right now because it's all out there somewhere. That's not the kind of joy I experience. The kind of joy I experience has nothing to do with somebody's age or occupation or geography or education or marital status or good looks or circumstances or material possessions. You know why? The kind of joy that I experience as a believer in Jesus is a joy by choice. I choose joy. I choose joy if I've got a lot. I choose joy if I've got a little. This is the day the Lord hath made. I will rejoice and be glad. Not this is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice because I got a pay raise or because there's no water in my basement or because my car started or because the kids weren't rebellious. No, this is the day, period. So I will rejoice and be glad in it. We are joyful by choice. We don't put our joy off for some day when our barns are bigger, right? We don't put our joy off for someday when everything has been tied up in our life and there are no more difficulties. We're joyful right now, period, because God is good. Amen? It's a joy by choice. Not this guy. He's planning on it someday. I'll be happy when that day comes. Several years ago, James Patterson and Peter Kim published the results of a national survey on morals. I shared this with Corey's class. This was entitled The Day America Told the Truth. What People Would Do for Money. They polled some people, lots of people, and here are the things people said they would be willing to do for $10 million. Before I show you the list, let me put that in your head. What would you be willing to do for $10 million? Tell you what, I'd eat Chinese food for $10 million. I'd own a cat for $10 million. I'd become a Boilermaker fan for $10 million. I wouldn't mean it in my heart, but I would say it out. Well, here's the kind of things that people said they would do. 25% of those surveyed would abandon their entire family for $10 million. 23% would become a prostitute for a week or more for $10 million. 16% would give up their American citizenship for $10 million. I'm surprised that's not higher, to be honest with you. 19% said they would leave their spouse for $10 million. 12% would withhold testimony and let a murderer go free for $10 million. 7% said they would kill a stranger for $10 million. And 5% said they would put their children up for adoption. Heck, there were times I'd give mine away for free, so I don't get that one. It's truly amazing the choices that we make when it comes to money. And equally amazing how we can believe there are no consequences when it comes to those choices. And one of the consequences of this kind of pursuit for more is the loss of real joy. This farmer couldn't enjoy what he had because he's putting off joy someday for what he will have. How sad is that? I bet there are people in this church doing the same thing. Yeah, when I get this done, when I get the house paid off, when I get my full retirement if only. That's no way to live. That's just trying not to die. Got to choose joy right now. And he didn't. And God called him a fool because of it. I've always appreciated the people in my world that were adaptable, who showed me that Christianity is real and that Jesus can bring joy into their life even when their circumstances aren't that great. Joy, someone said, is the flag that flies above the castle of their hearts, announcing that the King has made his home there. So I'll say this to y'all, and I'll say it in love, and I do love you. I don't want your woe is me pity parties. You can have your glass half empty and your warts that are brought on by worry. No more mostly cloudy with a chance of sun for me. I'm determined to look at what I have, not what I don't have, to take inventory over what I've been given, not what was kept from me. I'm committed to gratitude, not greed, thankfulness, not things. And I'm committed to Jesus, who brings me joy no matter what's going on in my life. I'm not looking for the joy that this rich farmer's looking for. That's someday joy. I remember this dude. It came across my news feed again, a story about Buddy Post. He won the Pennsylvania lottery in 1988, $16.2 million. Now, back then, that was a big lottery figure. Today, that's chump change, evidently. $16.2 million. He said the day he won the lottery in 1988, winning the lottery is the greatest day of my life. Shortly after, his brother tried to have him killed, thinking he could claim the inheritance. His girlfriend sued him for a third of the money, and she won. And then one tragic mishap after another continued to happen to Buddy Post until he died in January of 2006. But before he died, he did another interview, and he said, and this is a direct quote, "Winning the lottery was the worst day of my life." So let's put the two quotes together. 1988, winning the lottery was the greatest day of my life. 2006. Winning the lottery was the worst day of my life. The point's not lost on me, and you've surely been reminded of this more than once. Things don't often turn out the way we planned. So this rich farmer makes his plans for that day out there that never comes. He's a fool to think he can put off joy for another day. Now let's read that last verse one more time, and we'll tie this together because the Lord's talking to us. God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you prepared for yourself?" And this is about us. This is how it will be with anyone at Hillcrest who stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. Why did God call him a fool? Because he forgot about others. He forgot where it came from. And he thought his money could buy joy and contentment. I told you about Myrtle, who gave me that quote that we started with, the advice that I gave you. Let me tell you about her a little bit. She was an awesome lady, very positive all the time. She would say, when life gives you lemons, why make lemonade when you can have a lemon meringue pie? That's what she would say. That's the people I want to be around. Well, Myrtle was Bill's grandma, and Bill's grandma and grandpa were getting ready to celebrate their 60th wedding anniversary. Check this out. And his grandma said, "Hank, I want you to go to Macy's and get a suit because this is a big anniversary for us. I want you to wear a suit." Well, Grandpa Hank said, "I ain't wearing no suit." Of course, his normal attire was overalls with no shirt. And that was for church. So he ain't going to wear no suit. But Grandma insisted. She ruled the house. She said, "We're going to get a suit." Went to Macy's, buy him a suit. He never wore it. Never wore it. She'd always say, "Put that on. It's all right." He never wore it. Had that suit. About 9 months later, Hank passed away. And Bill and Myrtle, his grandma, were sitting at the funeral home. And the funeral director said, "Ma'am, what would you like your husband buried in?" Well, she looked at Bill. She said, "He's going to wear that suit now." Poor man can't catch a break. Dead. So they buried him in it. And afterwards, Bill and Myrtle were talking, having coffee, grandma and grandson. And he said, "Grandma, people are going to start calling, asking about grandpa's stocks and savings. If you don't want to deal with him, just tell him he's out in the garden or gone into town. They'll have to call back." And she said, "Well, I don't want to lie. Lord don't like liars." He said, "Well, whatever you want." So Bill went home. Several months later, he's visiting his grandma. And she says, you know what, honey, you were right. People been calling. One fella called once a week for 6 weeks. And Bill said, well, what'd he want? And she said, well, that's what I wanted to know. So I asked him, young man, what's this all about? The man said, I'm from Macy's, and I wanted to see how your husband was enjoying his suit. Bill said, what did you say, Grandma? She said, well, I don't want to lie because the Lord don't like liars. So I said, young man, we can't get it off of him. So that's the lady that said, always start with your source, not your situation. Because if you have the right source, your situation won't matter. You're probably familiar with this man. We'll close with it. Theodore Geisel. You might know who that is. Yeah, he's got a middle name. And his middle name is Seuss. And in 1960, his best friend came to him with a bet. Said, I'll give you $50 if you can write an entertaining children's book using just 50 words. He said, game on. 2 weeks later, he returns with the manuscript for this book right here. A book that has sold 200 million copies, proving once again that sometimes simpler is better. Now, I know, I'm like you all. You can't just all of a sudden simplify a schedule that's gotten out of control. God has never said you can't have other interests. He's never said you can't like to do other activities, be involved in things. He's never said that. But what he said is, I'm either first in your life or I'm not really in your life at all. Because any place other than first, it's not an option that God gives us. So I've learned for me that what I starve in my life dies, and I needed to starve some things, and what I feed thrives. The church was just outside of Cincinnati, and they were doing a big Thanksgiving offering just the way we did today, only they passed a plate. And near that church was a housing development with some folk who didn't have a whole lot. And there was a little boy that came to church from that housing development by himself. Probably too young to walk to church by himself, but he did. And his mom didn't care. She was strung out on drugs. And his dad didn't care because he was in prison. So this boy, who had nothing really, would go to church every Sunday. Fairly good-sized church just outside of the city. They were taking the offering that day, and he hadn't thought about it, the little guy hadn't, and as the offering plates come, he's like, I don't have anything to give, I want to give. And he didn't know what to do, so he thought about it, and when the plate came to him, and they took a picture of this, by the way, he took the plate, and he stepped out in the aisle, and he set the plate down, and he stepped into the plate. Just stood there. Greatest offering it's ever been given right there. Because even that little boy realized God doesn't want things from me. He wants me. He wants me. We were so important to God that he didn't hold back. He gave us everything he had. So I guess at the end of the series, I just want to ask you all, how important is God to you? Because if my money could talk, it would say what you choose to do with me speaks volumes about who and whose you are. Would you be willing to step into an offering plate today?